Because it matters. AI is the talk of the town. How will artificial intelligence transform the construction industry? Are BIM, IoT, and digital twins the forerunners of a digital revolution, or simply tools to make everyone's life easier? Join our host, Wilma Werner, as we explore the world of safe, secure, and seamless access solutions.
Welcome to Because It Matters, the podcast where we open the doors to innovation, merge aesthetic with function and security with elegance. My today's guests on this episode are Kai Oberstufer and Ian Jones. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Wilma.
Thank you very much. Hi, Wilma.
I'm curious, and the audience is curious, of course, to find out who are you and why are you an expert for this topic?
My name is Kai Oberstufer. I'm located in Germany, and I work for dormakaba since 2010. I'm in the field of construction, IT, and this stuff for about 20 years now. That's really a lot, and that's also I see a lot of things have changed since I started. But I'm already watching this. I'm part of this game, and that's why I'm probably the one who can answer a few questions here.
Yes, Ian Jones. So I am based in the UK. So my role is head of specification development for dormakaba UK and Ireland. I too started my journey with dormakaba back in 2010. And I've worked for probably been in the industry 20 years for sales roles and now in specification, dealing with architects providing the correct solutions for their buildings.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the typical questions? If I was the client, what are the typical questions that people approach you with?
Very early. So we get involved at a very early stage with buildings, and it's normally how many people I can get through my entrance, or it's normally how many people I have in my building, how many entrance doors do I need? And then the security questions then follow visual aesthetics of the doors. These questions mm-hmm. kind of follow and through the specification stage.
Yeah, from my side, since I'm more related to the IT part of this game, so I'm responsible at dormakaba for providing planning solutions, specification solutions, so software connected to this process. My questions that land on my table are more related to, hey, do you can support my way of working? Do you have digital data for that? Yes, we know you can answer. Ian can answer this question on a specific product related way, but do you have the technique to bring it to my desk? This is the questions I get. Do you have BIM models? Do you have plugins? Do you have tools? This is what I normally get on my desk.
So we know the ladies and gentlemen listening, what questions they can approach you with. So it's Kai and Ian on this episode today. And gentlemen, there's one question that I love asking all the guests on the podcast. If I called you in your spare time, because you are an expert in whatever field in your spare time, what topic would it probably be?
That's a tricky question. It's a tricky question to think.
It's an absolutely friendly yes. question.
What an expert. I actually quite like history. So, yeah, I like history. Always been and my wife and children sports. So I've always played sports. I've always played rugby. So that, I suppose, is my background as well.
Uh-huh. And so sports question, do you say football or do you say soccer?
I would actually, probably the rest of my country will hate me for saying this, but I think it's soccer.
So, you are absolutely right.
Because soccer is short for association football. So.
Yeah, of course. I can now say, yes, I'm into sports and into some other fancy topics, but I also love playing video games and retro games and console playing. So if you want to talk with me about the weapon modifications in Modern Warfare 3, I'm the right one to talk about that.
Okay, that is very specific. I used to play World of Warcraft, but that was ages ago.
Also a good one. So yeah. We can switch the topic in this podcast if you want.
Yes. I just stopped it. I think when the first add-on was released, I already stopped because it's very time consuming. No doubt about that.
I know. Yeah. I know. Excellent. Good.
Lovely, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Modern Architecture and Planning.
Both of you also experts at dormakaba, slightly different perspectives or slightly different areas of expertise. So what do you think? What are the main drivers behind the evolution of modern architecture and urban planning?
Is there one answer for every single building? Or is every single building different? Every single building has a different purpose. So you could be, mm-hmm. you could be looking at this. I don't think there's one answer you could give. I think everything is going down the green credentials. So it's saving energy. So to keep the doors closed, to keep the building as energy efficient as possible, to reduce the carbon footprint. That's probably one driver I can see through most projects, but every other project is different. I think it's what makes our job so interesting. So every single project has a different approach.
Yeah, and I agree with this. But I also see. I think we need to think in two ways. On the one hand side, you have the architectural design, how the building looks. I think this is still a challenge, and every designer, if you are architect, wants to have its own way of designing a building. And then on the other hand side, of course, you have the more strict rules and regulation that drive modern architecture more from a usability and sustainability and operational main perspective. So yeah, you have the sustainability goals, but you also need to have the buildings more user friendly, more intelligent, smart buildings, smart cities, smart things are a big topic that will drive the architecture. And I think in general, the problems have changed also as well. So we have more people who want to go into the cities. We have a lack of space there, large movements of people. This is all things that drive architecture more from a requirement perspective, not so much from a design, from an aesthetic perspective.
I think it's great to see the different trends. So maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, especially and a few working with a project in London, it was they're looking for glass, they're looking for very modern, and now we, especially in the past 5 years, it's kind of that sustainability. So we're actually repurposing buildings. So you might have a building built in the Victorian era, and instead of knocking it down and building your big glass building, we're repurposing these buildings. And so many architecture, whereas before everything was hidden, and I did a project and all the concrete is showing, and they actually want all the cable trunking showing, and that's what the architecture are going for. Unfortunately, okay. I think another thing, what I was thinking, one of the big things, I do say unfortunately, is security as well. So whereas you would have, if you had said a corporate office, and you always wanted that welcoming effect, so you wanted to get people inside the building, architecture still need that, but they also need the security, because we do have, let's say, the threats that we have in modern day, whether that be a terrorist threat or a protesters trying to come into the building. So you've got to try and make it as nice looking as possible. Often our brief is we want to make it as nice as possible, all made of glass, but the security of it like a prison. So, but not to look like a prison. So, yeah, on the flick of a switch, they can lock the building down.
Yeah. I also think that the complete Corona time we went all through had a kind of impact on this, because also in our company we see, hey, office space that has been used for many, many years and was completely full with people is now empty. We need to rethink how we use space, especially in densely populated urban areas, that might think to rethink about how we can utilize these things. Even going back to greener places and not just having building by building, but which forms the central core of a city.
You already mentioned quite a few changes that a population goes through in urban areas. So we have increased density of the population. We have increased demands with regards to design and functionality and security and laws and the complexity of the building process itself. What would you say, how does the increasing urbanization change our approaches to architecture and planning?
There are different other aspects that come into my mind. For example, it's getting more and more complex to have a construction site in the inner parts of the city. So I think in general, we must also think how we construct a building. Is it really necessary that every screw and every little piece is shipped individually on site? Or should we create kind of hubs and look at the logistic process, how to get stuff into our cities and construct there? I think this is one part of the story where we need to look at how do we create and operate and construct buildings in the future. I think in the way we did it in the past, it will not be doable anymore. People are not allowed to go by car in the city. What about the trucks? They are polluting everything. So this will also have an impact on how we design buildings and how we create buildings.
Yeah, definitely. It's the same. I think same in every city. Modularization is becoming a bigger and bigger thing. Like I said, building things in a factory and actually shipping them to site and to literally just kind of slot them into the building instead of actually having that building process on site cuts down everything, cuts down your leading times, or sorry, cuts down on your time on site. I hate to say it, you may be surprised, in the UK we don't get great weather all year round. So that has major delays.
Oh, that really surprises me.
I know.
Wow, first time
I know. But yeah, it's great. You're looking at the building program and you're thinking, okay, you know full well that you're going to lose. It's sad. You're probably going to lose a month over the winter due to high winds, bad weather, like I said, rain and things. So yeah, we can cut that time down by building the factory, it's absolutely brilliant.
And what would you say, if you were assigned to build a building in a city, what would be the most challenging one for you to build in? With regards to weather, circumstance, infrastructure, density?
The cities in the UK have all got their quirks. I mean, London has got to be the worst one. I mean, it's the old, so old. As you start digging down, you can hit water mains that no one knew of there, and roads that no one knew of there. So
Ian goes with London.
Good question. I also think that each city in each country has its own challenges. I think in Europe, we have a lot of regulations, sustainability and financial regulations, safety regulations. In other countries, in other parts of the world, might be other challenges. Sometimes it's the soil, it's the ground where you build in, some other structures and processes around it. But probably I also think maybe old cities like Venice, for example, might be a huge challenge if you want to do anything there that is new. But this is probably a kind of extraordinary example here.
Thank you very much.
Environmentally friendly technologies.
And Venice being I would say ancient city nearly, but a lot of history, which intrigues Ian's interest again. At the same time, we do need to use more and more innovative materials and even 3D printing in sustainable design. What would you say, is that important? And or if so, what role do they play? Innovative materials and 3D printing in Venice, preferably.
That's a very complicated question and a kind of artificial setup for the question. Of course, I would say, of course, innovative materials will play a role in being more sustainable and creating more sustainable buildings at the end. Whether it's 3D printing or some other stuff, this is just a part of reaching the goal of having more sustainable buildings here. I think there are a lot of other things also contributing to that. It's the traceability of materials. It's Ian, you said it already. It's the modular way, how we create buildings here, and it's a circular economy we need to look at. So it's a complete picture. These are many bricks we need to look at in order to make the complete puzzle. To get the complete picture of the puzzle.
Definitely. As an industry, we've got to keep pushing. We've got to keep pushing different products, different, like I said, environmentally friendly products, different technologies. It's what we've been doing for hundreds of years. Thousands of years ago, we lived in mud huts. Now we live in glass buildings, brick buildings. And every single time, there's a step, isn't there? We don't always get it right. Asbestos was one thing. Brilliant. Put it in every building because it's fireproof. And now look what it's done. So like I said, we're never going to get it right. We've got to realize that we're never going to get it right. There could be things that we're putting in now, which we could have health. Detriment to our health in a few years. Yeah. We've always got to keep striving.
Yeah. Yeah, but that brings me also to a kind of controversial opinion here on that topic, because sometimes I have the feeling if you look in a cellar in the engine room, let's put it that way, of a modern building, it looks like the command bridge of the Enterprise. So there are a lot of computers and IT and whatever. Sometimes I feel, is this really the right way? Because aren't we estimating too much from this technology? Isn't it better to go back more in the way to have kind of clean, old school building that also can be deconstructed and not composite materials and things that also can be put later on more in the circular economy instead of over engineering something? Sometimes I get the impression that
we've had this conversation on actual live projects, Kai, where the brief of the building will to have a U value or an air leakage of X, and we're referring to our doors, and you're thinking, well, the doors are going to be open, and you're going to lose everything, and then when you actually see the building, like you said, you go into the bowels of the building, and it's pushing out pollution. Due to all the servers and all the air conditioning, and you think why have we spent so many emails and so much time looking at this one element?
Exactly.
And it's a door. Yeah. It's meant to be open, like you said. It's really tricky. But I think if we can start getting down back towards sort of, as I said earlier, repurposing buildings, using their older techniques, because these buildings, they might be old, but they store the heat. They're big brick buildings, and they'll store that energy. Yeah. Whereas a glass building will leak it a lot quicker, a lot easier.
I've seen examples of two buildings have been constructed, one in a more modern way and one according to the kind they built in the 17th century with 1 meter thick walls and 5 or 4 meters high walls. And these buildings achieved almost the same quality also for the inhabitants as the modern ones. So of course not in every detail and not on that level, but they reached 80% without any electrical device installed there. So maybe the combination of both worlds makes our future here.
Do you already have an idea how to implement that?
What do you mean to implement? So we must start repurposing old buildings, or how do you mean, Wilma?
Well, Kai just said maybe it's the blend of both approaches that could be helpful.
You've really hit the nail on the head there. The blend of both approaches. And I think that is when architecture can be really beautiful. So when you can take maybe an old church and it's being repurposed into a multi-housing or high-end commercial block. So you've taken the church, but you've also added maybe a glass element onto there, and it's just making sure it flows. And that's what, when you look at projects and you're dealing with the architects, and it makes it really, really interesting. So you're not just taking a 17th century Gothic church and putting red bricks all around it, or it just looks, or we've all seen them, they look awful. But yeah, you can actually have modern construction technologies, but they can, like you said, blend into that building.
And you just said that these older buildings, ancient buildings, sometimes multiple hundred years old, are extremely resilient. And can you provide us with an example, or maybe multiple examples, of resilient and climate adaptive architecture that could withstand extreme weather conditions?
Again, your extreme weather conditions, you can't say that to someone based in the UK. Because it depends. It's either too hot or too cold, or it's too wet or it's too dry. But it's always going to be, I don't know, it's always going to be quite tricky, isn't it, to have that, to make sure it fits everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I think I also struggle a bit to giving one answer and one example. I think we should also look really more closer to for what purpose, in what region, in what area, in what part of the city a building is constructed, and then find a solution specialized for that spot. Maybe this is also something for the future, that we need to have more individual solutions for individual places, instead of saying, hey, we need this wall thickness all over the place in the complete Britain. Maybe it's better to say, hey, in the UK, in the southern part, it's a different one is required, instead of compared to the northern part, something like this. So maybe we should also be more flexible in how we look at our standards and regulations here, because the most sustainable building is the building that has not been built. So if you want to be more sustainable, and you can reduce the materials you use for the building, that's probably a better approach, instead of substituting concrete with some other stuff that might cause a problem in 10 years.
I think it's funny how, and I don't know about you, Kai, but when I think about reusing older buildings, I am thinking of kind of turn of last century, sort of like 17th century, 18th century, 19th. I never think of a 60s or 70s building. I think we lost our way. It's like, yeah, knock that down. We'll start again. It's probably full of asbestos. We don't want to start going near that. But yeah, maybe.
So, and if you had the chance to rebuild or redo one building on this planet, which one would it be?
I think an old historic building, and you can then repurpose it.
I would start with the pyramids, because they are easy to build. They just don't require any high tech. They have a purpose. They are not not invest objects. So they were built to last longer, and maybe this is something we should learn from. So to build something that is intended to be used for 3,000 years and not for 5 years, and then sell it to the next one who comes across.
But you said they're easy to build. So do you know how they built them then?
Okay.
That's a different podcast. In history. Thank you very much.
We can have we should have a chat on that on a different stream.
Or that's a whole different podcast.
The Internet of Things in Architecture.
Coming from the pyramids. Gentlemen, now this is an interesting switch of topics. Well, actually, we're still online. What would you say? In what ways are IoT and AI transforming the construction industry? Not comparable to how the pyramids were built, probably not, but it better would have been. So, what would you say? How are IoT and AI transforming the construction industry?
I would say they have an impact. I don't know whether they will transform. In my past, I have seen so many technologies appearing, and every one of them was transforming the complete industry. I'm not really sure whether this will happen. Of course, IoT, we talked about smart buildings, will or already has an impact on how we operate and manage buildings, for sure. I think here the connectivity will rise. So cars talking to the building, buildings talking to the devices installed in them, people connected via their mobile phones to the building. The network of a city will grow, and we will definitely benefit from it. The AI question is a bit more tricky from my point of view. I think I'm, let's wait. At the moment, I see 5,000 different fancy demos around AI, but there is no real killer app that will transform or make a lot of people getting lost their jobs.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like you said, the IoT, to make a building easier to use, it's all about that user experience. If they go around like things like the multi-housing, so if I'm living in my flat and we want to book the TV room to watch the soccer, I can send you the QR code. I can book that using my mobile phone. I can send you a QR code because you can access the building that day and get into the TV room, but you can't get in tomorrow. And just that user interface that we can get, it just makes that, I think that really, really interests the architectural world as well. So to make the buildings as easy to use as possible. The AI as well, yeah, I think that's not a one-size-fits-all. I think we can use it for certain tasks. It worries that people want to use it for designing the buildings, and you kind of think, what's the parameters that's going to get? Is it just going to get, we're all going to be designing square boxes and living in there? We're not going to be, as we're talking about, churches repurpose into offices or homes with beautiful blended architecture.
I think should assist us when it comes to architecture. Maybe in other fields it's different, but when it comes to architecture, I think it should assist us in creating better buildings. Not only from the design perspective, but I think a huge benefit in using these technologies is in compliance checking, in automating tasks that are a pain for the users at the moment. Mapping of data, strong compliance checks, but it should not take away the design approach, the aesthetics of a building. Optimizing, yes, but making it more aesthetic, I'm not seeing this, because otherwise, I think I don't want to live in a world where computers doing the artwork of humanity and humans are doing low-paid jobs. This is the total contrast of how I am expecting AI to support humanity. So I think it should still support us and not take away the task of creativity, of aesthetics, and of human touch for buildings and how we want to live. I want to live in a society that is constructed still by humans and not by machines in terms of design.
Yeah, it's to be there again, we're getting quite deep into other subjects, but not just in the construction, like AI, it's not just there for, like you said, if it takes the menial tasks away, if we can use computers, which we do, we use the computers to take away the menial tasks, and we can concentrate on the more exciting, the more artistic tendencies that the human has. And we do it now. We all use Excel. We all use AutoSum in Excel. And that's a very, 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 very basic. And you kind of think, you don't think of it as AI, but you do a formula. It takes you 5 minutes to do the formula, and then you put that in every cell, and then you can just put in your figures, and away you go. You haven't got to sit there with a calculator. And like you said,
and I'm very happy that Excel does that for me.
Exactly. Exactly. And then beforehand, I said, you have a calculator. Now, not my generation, but my grandparents, they didn't use a calculator. They used a slide rule and how they worked it. So again, we're bringing out the different, we're using different technologies, but a technology then becomes second nature. So you explain to my children about using a handheld phone or a phone plugged into a building, they kind of go, what are you talking about? But yeah, it's just different things. So how many times at school, Kai, were you told You won't be walking around. You won't be walking around the calculator in your pocket.
Yes,
I remember that. I remember that one too.
Yes.
I wish I could turn around to a teacher now and say.
Yeah, must be hard being a math teacher nowadays. So, but gentlemen, do you use AI supported tools like Auto Review AI or Upcodes AI? Do you use them?
Yes.
I do.
I use them for programming, for software, doing software, because they are great, really great at it. But also having someone explained to me when we look at tools like the chatbot we have, or ChatGPT and stuff like that, it's like having Albert Einstein sitting in your basement and you can ask him everything. And this is exactly how I use them. I'm not generating images or something. I'm just saying, hey, look at this Excel. Can you sum it up? Or can make me a summarize, or go to this website and make me a summary of this. I think it's great. It's fantastic. It will not take away my job, but will make my job easier. And this is something we should aim for, to see how we can utilize this, and we will not get it away from our jobs.
I haven't yet, and I say I haven't yet, and I sometimes I feel a bit of a Luddite. It's kind of like, well, I struggle writing things down, but sometimes I'd rather go through the struggle to get to the end, and I haven't used things like ChatGPT yet, but. Yeah, but my children use it, and it's second nature to them. And I'm like, oh no.
Yes.
So maybe
it's
I'm
like
just stuck.
Native to them.
It really is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I also think it will also have an impact on our industry. Coming back to a more professional level now. Talking about our specification door hardware, and I think also here we will benefit from this one. I mean, in designing things, in talking about requirements, we can use AI to help us. Again, not to replace someone here, but really to help us to get probably better setups of components, find problems in settings around doors and door hardware. I think for our industry, it will sooner or later, there will be solutions, there will be tools supporting specification based on AI.
Which are not here to replace us, but to support us. And what do you think? The clients implementing IoT and AI in the construction process, what challenges do you think they are facing or will be facing then?
Every building, every sector is going to have a different issue. Especially with things like the IoT, you might have a residential, say you have a house or dwelling with it's all connected. That could be with your family, you use your phone to get into your front door and use your washing machine and change the TV. It could be completely different to a hospital, which is going to be completely different to a commercial building. So, yeah, it's just having that. But I think they all got the same. It's having that user experience. So it's making sure it's the right. Sometimes there's no such thing as a bad product. Is a bad specification. So if it's not put, if a product is not put in the correct environment it is meant to be, or if it's in the incorrect environment, then people are going to think that's a bad product.
But here AI can help.
Go on, convince me.
You said if you have the right product in the wrong environment, this is something we can be assisted by an AI, learning from our experience, learning from other projects, saying, okay, yeah, you're good if you want to place this in this hospital, in this door at the main entrance. But from my experience, I would say this is not working. And this kind of input, a machine learning algorithm can support our industry, can our business help, or can even help the planner before he does the specification in finding the right product on his desk.
Ian, slightly convinced?
I don't know.
A little bit.
I don't know. I think to trust the computer program to start the design of the building is going to be tricky. I don't know. Maybe I'm just stuck. But yeah, I just think to Yeah, to look, I don't know, if you've got a hospital when it tells you you need this door, but is that the actual correct door, or is it this type of entrance or this type of material to help move people around that building, or these products to help people move around that building as efficiently as possible? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, there's only one way to find out.
Rima, you were talking about the challenges. I think what one overarching challenge for all in the industry is finding the right people. I think what we are now expecting is not a clash of culture, but a clash of domains or worlds. On the one hand side, you must have knowledge about buildings, products, and the construction. And on the other hand side, you must start to think in and more IT-driven way, in classes, in chats, in AI, in APIs. And that's a hard challenge to get people that can live in both worlds and judge on technology and use technology in a proper way. I think this is probably the overarching most important point to solve.
Mm-hmm. So people, staff that are able and have the skills to live in both worlds at the same time and provide.
I would say yes.
Okay, thank you.
Digital twins in refurbishment projects.
And now that we're talking about technology and the blend with the kind of real world and physical world, gentlemen, what do you say? How are BIM and digital twins changing the approach to large-scale refurbishment projects?
I think BIM is probably one of the most revolutionary elements of the construction industry since AutoCAD. I think it's
that's a statement.
It really is. So it hasn't took off as well as I thought it would. I think when it first came about. Show me, probably about 10 years ago, we kind of thought it was going to be on every building. It's slowly getting there. But yeah, you see how it can work and how it can aid a design of a building. It's absolutely brilliant. Putting the different model, putting the individual models to the larger model and making sure that building is working and can do what the building is designed to do.
I agree, and I also must say you said Ian already that BIM has made a kind of progress evolves over the years, and I would even go one step further. I would say today, if I talk about BIM, people say, "Oh, you come up with BIM." No one is interested in BIM because it is already in some places one step further. It's talking about the digitization of the construction industry, and BIM is just part of it. So when we talk also about digital twins here, in 10 years ago, everyone said, "Oh, the BIM model was the digital twin," but it's not. It's far more. We have a digital twin for the operation of the building. We have it for the planning stage, for the operational stage. We have tiny digital twins. So it's really exploded, and BIM is one thing here, but probably one of the most important ones to drive the change in the industry.
I mean, it's something, speaking with the voice of the customers, it's something architects look at. It's the first thing you look at in a product is they want the BIM object of that product to start putting that into their model to make sure their building works. This is a very, very early stage. This is not one of the main contractors on there. This is, like I said, to make sure that they can get their hands on that information, and make sure their building is working. Like I said, I think it's about years ago. It was we have to make sure we have CAD drawings for all our products. So now that's second nature. Yeah. It's like I said, it's BIM is the new thing. So
looking at our company, I also see that this required a new way of thinking, and that shows us that we are able to also to transform a company like ours into a new digital area. Because 5 years or even 10 years ago, people came to me and said, "Hey, we need BIM objects because you said, hey, customers requested it also then, but then it was, oh, what is it? Is it marketing? Is it who's responsible for it? So it was no one is really knowing how to handle it. And this has so dramatically evolved. So we have now really set up more professional structures also to support this need to create BIM objects and to give what the customer wants. And it's, I think this is really great to see.
100%. And I think also, as I said, we're a manufacturer of products that help move people around a building. And we want to be involved with the architecture, we want to be involved with the main contractor, we want to be involved with the subcontractor. There's lots of different fingers of that design who we would never really target or never think that we needed to speak to. But in the event of things like the BIM objects and the schematics, and when we're using things like tools like EntryWorks and it's given all the wiring diagrams, and then we find out, oh yeah, it's absolutely really, the electrical contractor loves using your products because you give us the wiring diagrams and they can actually make all the channeling out of a conduit, the containment around the building way before we actually thought that was going to be we never thought that was a, I don't think, I certainly didn't. Mm. We didn't think that was needed at a very early stage. And you find it, you think, okay, brilliant. Yeah, that these people need us. We feel we need information a lot sooner. But yeah, it makes sense that electrical contractors need it sooner. Very important point here.
And that show, you mentioned EntryWorks. And this is a perfect example for me how the topic of BIM evolved over the years, because this is not really so much related to 3D data like models. Yeah, it's important, we have it, yeah, but here we see that suddenly people demand, what they really demand as well is data. They want information, they want drawings, they want product data, and this is all conveyed using modern digital technologies and interfaces, as we did in the EntryWorks with our planning and planner tool. So it really shows me that we started with, oh, BIM equals 3D, to BIM is, yes, 3D as well, but it's data, it's competence, it's know-how, it's all bundled together, shipped in a digital packet.
So it's way bigger than people originally thought.
As the majority of people thought, yeah, right.
Okay. Ian, we know that you are into history. What would you say, what benefits does technology offer in the refurbishment of historical buildings?
The first lesson I was taught, I was going to go back, the first lesson I was taught about BIM is, this has been used in the automotive industry for years. This has been used in the aerospace industry for years. We don't use it in the construction process. So you could get take your, like you said, your neo-Gothic church, and you want to make that a commercial building. So we know that the build, like you said, the existing building, it's great for energy efficiency because it's got really thick walls. But what we want to do is not take you don't want to take anything away from that building. You want to add to that building. And you can use BIM to make sure you're adding to that building. You're making it a better performing building. But like I said, if we weren't using things like that, or tools like this, and we start stripping away some of the structure and the fabric of that building, you could end up making it a poorer performer and make it look worse as well. So to the detriment of the visuals of that building. So you can use that, you can play around, do lots of design, making sure that building is perfect before even a tradesman has hit that building.
And here, digital tools from the field of BIM can really help in the renovation of existing buildings. For example, laser scanning now. You can, with a click of a button, you can scan a complete building and get by some easy steps a 3D model out of it, which was impossible a few years ago. So yes, it's a lot of data, and yes, it takes some effort still, but to get a model where we can work on, where we can preserve what we have in order to add then something what Ian said, add functionality, add performance to this. Here we have made a lot of progress in capturing the reality using BIM technologies.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Inclusivity and accessibility in urban planning.
Coming from historical buildings to new developments, why would you say is inclusivity a central aspect of modern urban planning? And how is it implemented in new developments?
I've seen a couple of in central London there's mm-hmm. three London boroughs, and this kind of plays off of what we've been talking about. They hate, and I mean hate with a capital H, revolving doors, because they do not see these as inclusive products. Even though in the UK or in England, to comply with Part M, you must have a pass door next to a revolving door. It's going to keep the heat inside that building. And like I said, so the environmental impact of that building is going to be really, really hit by taking that revolving door away. But then another element of the design process wants that element taken away. So that's always a tricky. So it's looking like I said, the environmental impact of the building against the inclusivity of it. So that's a something we come across, I'd say, weekly. Like you said, it's always something, and we work with the architecture world to say, and sometimes, again, using door efficiency calculator, sometimes we can actually say, do you know what? A sliding door is actually more efficient. So yeah, let's know we can give the architect that data, and they go, okay, brilliant. And it's working into that model. And like you said, sometimes we're assisting the architect to say, no, you really want to keep that revolving door in there. And like you said, they're working with the planning offices to make sure that's kept.
Especially in the topic we touched before, the renovation of existing buildings is a key factor or is a challenge, I think the concept of being disabled is nothing in the sense 1600 that someone was aware of. So when they created the churches, it was either you can walk or you cannot not walk. So that was not a topic. But for us, of course, it is a topic. And and I also, in the same way, I think the most interesting cities are the cities that keep these old buildings in their heart. And we then, of course, it's logic to update them with a feature that everyone can have access to these buildings without destroying the nature of the old buildings, or even without adding something to them that makes them crazy or silly looking, so to maintain their style. And this is a challenge here for the construction industry, but maybe also for our industry in particular.
And is there an example that crosses your mind that is a good example of the implementation of both needs?
I think Europe and I don't know whether I should include UK here, but because you went through some hard times and you make some silly decisions in the past. But anyway, I would say Europe.
This is a topic for another podcast.
And then we need to touch football also, or soccer.
soccer.
To spice up this talk a bit. In general, I would say if I go through all the cities in Europe and I would say in London as well and in the UK, I think we already did a pretty good job. So I cannot say, we have a particular good example here and there. But I would say I see a lot of examples where these old churches, castles or whatever have been made open to be accessible by disabled people, by blind people, whatever. So the inclusiveness is already there without saying, hey, okay, it's in this particular case very, very good solved. I would say this concept in Europe is probably the best example here.
Oh, now we got an example. Thank you. And do you think that the creation of car-free complexes contribute to more inclusive cities?
Ooh, difficult question.
I'd say, for you, it's an easy question.
I would say no.
Why not? or what is missing?
I think still, I mean, a lot of all of the European cities and the European society relates on being mobile and using cars to get into the city. And even for people who live in on a countryside, they need to take the car to go to the city, and they are excluded, or people cannot really walk, they use the car. There is, if you just stay in your central London bubble, hey, it's fine to go by train or by whatever car, by bus or by train or by bike. But I'm not really sure whether this hard cut will make the inclusiveness larger.
I think if you want a city which is car free, you probably need to start from zero. You need to start from scratch. There's no point trying to implement this into London, into Dortmund, into any city around the world. I live near Cambridge, and they've tried to make that as car free as possible, but you cannot make it 100% car free. And then you need to make sure that the infrastructure of that city is there, the public infrastructure. So if you don't want people to use cars, people could quite easily use bikes, could usually travel by foot, scooters, etc. But then you need to make sure you've got bus networks, tram networks, but you're still going to, make sure, like you said, if you are a wheelchair user, or not just in your wheelchair, if you're pushing your buggy with your children. I think a lot of people think inclusivity just, it applies to people with an impairment. It's not, like you said, we're just talking about trying to get people into a lovely cathedral. Well, like I said, when all my children are younger, I'm pushing around in a buggy, and if I can't get into that, I'm going to go somewhere else. It's like I said, I think if you really want to make a car-free city, you've got to start from zero. And we're never going to do that. It would be very difficult to do that.
The future of architecture and planning.
And let's boil the two approaches down, the traditional construction practices and the new AI-supported approaches in architecture. What's your point of view on the relationship between these two?
As I think if you use AI to take away these menial tasks, to take away the data there, if you can use that to save you time in that design process, then it can be great. But I really do think you can use AI to give you the artistic feel of what a person is going to do, what an architect is going to do, what a designer is going to do to make that building. I would be worried, is it just going to design square grey boxes, and we're all going to be living in square grey boxes, and every city is going to look the same in the next 50 years? Whereas you would never have things like the Sydney Opera House, the Sistine Chapel. We'd never have the wonders of the world built if we were using AI, because if someone's had a vision and that's what they want to do. And how many times were people told, architects told, no, they cannot do that? But they said, no, I want to do it. And then they've worked with manufacturers or people to actually develop products to make that building and to give it the stamp. Well, would AI not ask those questions? Would it just think, oh, yeah, it can't be done? There's no product out there to do that. So we'll move away.
That's a statement.
And I agree with that. Coming back to my pyramid example, if you ask an AI whether it's a good idea to build a tomb for 100 years made of millions of sandstones, the AI will probably say, no, it's not a good idea. So I agree with you. We would not have a couple of these wonders of the world. Let me be the devil's advocate here and draw a more darker picture because of the problems I see or what we should avoid. And I agree with fully what you said, Ian, but if I look at the possible future, I would not like to have, since AI is driven by data, and who has data? Big companies have data. So I would avoid that the architecture is driven by big companies, architectural companies with hundreds or thousands of people that drive this because they can feed their AI. And the little offices are wiped away because they don't have the power to use these tools to feed these tools. And I also don't want that architecture is just driven by facts, figures, and numbers, because it's easy to compare our door closer with some other door closers just by the size and the price and whatever, and then people make decision based on just these numbers. I think architecture has still something to do with aesthetics, with being in there, with something human designed. I don't want to live in a city that is completely computer generated and optimized just by number.
And can you imagine if traditional methods and AI supported approaches, do you think they could work together to advance architecture and urban planning?
Yes.
Would that be possible?
I would say yes.
That would be possible.
I think yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But it's need yes, I would say yes, but of course it needs the willingness on the architectural side also to adapt this and not to fight against it, because it's a trend, it's something you will not stop, and if you don't adapt it, other people will do it, and then it's maybe too late. So I would say if you adapt it, if you take the best, if you steer it, if you control it, if you make it your tool, then this one can be done. Yeah,
I agree. Do you know, Kai, I don't think I've ever considered what you spoke about there, the big tech companies taking over, because if you're using AI, it's going to be an expensive tool to use, and we are going to be, even more money is going to be given to the big tech companies, who we all give half our wages to anyway, and just when they deliver everything to your door. But that could be, like you said, to blend it together, 100%. Everything can be blended together. I think it's what we can touch on. Everything we need to keep striving as a business, and we always do. When I deal with the architects and our project manager and our sales guys go, oh, how many times have you heard it? Oh, the architects wanted to make this, they want to do that. And I turn around to these guys, the people who say, they're pushing the envelope. They're pushing the envelope, and it's making us push, and it's striving us to keep pushing what we can do, and to make better products. So, and I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you. And looking even further into the future, what do you think? How can architects, planners, and innovators collaborate to meet those challenges that will definitely come up in the future? And maybe already arrived today.
Without blowing our own trumpet here, I think it's working with manufacturers, working with innovative manufacturers. No, you have
do
to
it.
Because
do
that's
it.
What we're here to do. And how many times have we've worked on projects and you've really drilled down and you find out what is important to the architect, what's important to the planner, what's important to the designer, and the different aspects, and it's making sure we give. Okay, we might be able to hit, they've got a list of three things that they want. We might be able to do one and two, but we can't quite do three. But let's say, and that's where I will talk to someone like Kai and say, right, I've got this project. We really want to work with this architect. We really want to put our name on this. What can we do? And then Kai can, like you said, we can start having ideas together. And it might be, like you said, Kai's more from the IT background. He'd come up with something different and brilliant. We can then make sure that we can give the architect or the designers what they need. It's not always possible. No. Sometimes it's not. It's like, sometimes you just think, no, we just can't do that. But yeah, we want to make sure. And like you said, that's what puts a smile on my face. That's what makes me get up in the morning. No 2 days are the same. No two projects are the same. We're always trying to innovate. We're always trying to make sure we give the best products, and using the tools at our disposal.
Yeah. I think we need three things to make it really happen. We need tools. We need the right tools to support collaboration, to support better design. So we really need IT. we need a mindset that supports collaborative working and not seeing, hey, the other one is my enemy. No, it's my partner. We all have one aim. We wanna have the best building for the users, for the investor, yes, for the environment and for the city. But also we need a third one, which is the regulative and law level here. So we need the right project laws and the right project contracts in order to allow a collaborative working and to act as a team. And this is still not always the case. There are slight steps toward this collaborative contracts, but I think this is a very important part of the better future we are developing in our minds here.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have one final question, and I tend to make it a more a personal one and a prospective one. Ian, since you are into history, if you had the chance to be there at the point in time that a certain building was built, what building would you love to watch being built?
Wow, that's tricky. You get the ones that spring to mind, like things like this. Yeah,
it's a friendly question again.
I think, like you said, I don't think I can pick one building. You get the iconic ones. Like the Sydney Opera House,
for example.
We've got the Tower Bridge in London. Mm-hmm. But like you said, some of the ones that they have, St Paul's Cathedral, to when Wren started designing that, and the new city once it burnt down in after the Great Fire. But yeah, that could be really interesting. But yeah, to see what we could actually use now.
That's a huge time spent. And you're even doing research then.
That's what you said. If you wanted to make that's what he tried to do. He tried to make things like what we would call like a green city. And he really once London burnt down in 1666, he wanted to rebuild the city. But unfortunately, we couldn't wait. Well, the people couldn't wait for the city to be built. So they were building their houses around. So he had the St. Paul's Cathedral and the various buildings, and everything spoiled around it. So, and London still isn't finished.
Maybe it never will be. And Kai, you told us you are into online games. You know yourself around World of Warcraft as well. And for those of you who are not online gamers and are not part of the MMPG, I don't know the abbreviation anymore, but games like these. If there was one continent to be built after a city in the world, so you had the chance to virtually stroll around that city and ride through it on your tiger, maybe, which city would you love to have rebuilt digitally? Don't tell me it's a tricky question, okay?
Good. But maybe I combine uh-huh. I combine uh-huh. the question with Ian's hobby, because maybe it's not the city, uh-huh. it's the city and in time. So, for example, I would
okay.
I think something like Rome, when the old Romans were there, is probably something I would love to see. Or maybe some other cities, but in the past or in the future, who knows? Something like our one of our cities, like Rome, but from the past. I think this would something I would uh-huh. like to see to see what the city was, what life in the city was, because city is always connected for me with life, with people in there doing something with the city. So it's a combination. But it's funny to get the curve back. There are some video games that play in Paris, and they took images from the Notre Dame Cathedral from the video game to help building it up again after the fire. So there is a connection from video games into the real life. And I find it very, very surprising, but also very, very good to see.
I think video games have got an absolute great, great place. I mean, I'm not a massive gamer myself, but my children are. And you heard of Roblox? Yeah?
Yeah, of course.
So my daughter, she's 12 now. She was playing, this was last year, she was playing Roblox. She kept coming down. And I was sitting in the living room. She kept coming into the living room, looking around, and then going back into her room. And she kept doing this. We were like, she kept going in the kitchen in different rooms. I was like, what are you doing? And she was actually playing a game. I can't remember. I think it was called Bloxburg. She built our house in 3D format and was walking around. And it even had the doors the same. In my garage, I've got a rowing machine. Yeah. You walked into the garage, there's a rowing machine. And there's my bikes on the wall. And it is... And I'm like, and she's very artistic. I'm like, you are doing what we've been speaking about this past hour. So you are using models. You are using to
very good.
She's 12 years old. That's old hat.
So that means natural talent, creative plus future
technologies, 100%
of Domokaba.
Yes.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for being my guest on this episode. Thank you to Ian Jones, located close to Cambridge, and to Kai Oberstufer, located close to Ennepetal. Thank you, and thank you to the audience for listening. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you, Bulma. Thank you, Kai. Thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Same for me. Thank you, Wilma. Thank you, Ian. Thanks to the audience. Goodbye and speak soon.
That was Because It Matters, a Dormakaba podcast. New episodes every month wherever you can listen to a podcast and on dormakaba.com.